G'day, and welcome to a La Trobe University podcast. I would be your host, Matt Smith, and today we'll be having a yarn with that bloke there, Barry Blake, about the origin and importance of Australian slang. Barry is an emeritus professor of the linguistics program at La Trobe University, and he's the author of the books Secret Language and Playing with Words.
Both the accent and the slang vocabulary are distinctive, and they are important because slang is a marker of identity. That's really why it exists. And in a differentiated society like Western society, there's a lot of need for slang. You have differentiation by occupation, by socioeconomic status, and so on. And people tend to develop slang in those contexts, whereas in small-scale societies, there's not much in the way of slang.
What is the origin of slang, or when did we first see it creeping into language?
I don't suppose we know the origins because we don't have proper records, but we do know that what used to be called cant existed in England in the 17th century, and we have got a more or less continuous history of English slang from the 17th century, but it'd be fair to say that the slang must have existed earlier, I would think.
And what was the use of slang there? Why did it come about?
Well, once again, to do with the differentiation in society, and the main slang, or cant as it used to be called, is associated with the criminal classes and those that live on the fringes, gypsies, for instance, itinerant travellers, itinerant tradesmen, anybody who might invoke the suspicion of the law, whether they're actual lawbreakers or not.
And why did they speak slang?
It expresses solidarity and to some extent secrecy, to a small extent, not to a great extent. For instance, you take backslang, which costers and so on would use in front of customers. They could use backslang, that is pronouncing a word backwards, in front of customers and talk to one another without the customer knowing what they're talking about. So to some extent, it was a secret form of communication, but it's largely just an in-group thing to identify a group.
I did hear at one point that it was so that people could speak in bars amongst themselves and not be understood maybe by the authorities.
That's true. That's true to a great extent. But you can imagine that those authorities who mix with the criminal classes would cotton onto this pretty quickly and they'd know the slang too. It really only works with people who are quite unfamiliar with them.
Is that also called Cockney slang in that instance?
We're talking about Cockney rhyming slang, which has been recorded from the 19th century. And once again, I worry about whether the slang existed in other parts of Britain, but because London's the capital, we just happen to have records from there. But yes, that's a distinctive form of slang, which is not where you can just interpolate a few examples into your speech here and there, and it can be quite obscure, particularly if you leave out the rhyming part of the slang. So if you talk about a china instead of a china plate for mate, it's quite obscure. What's the relationship between china and mate? Or give us a captain, give us a captain cook for a look, for instance. That's an Australian variant. In Britain, they tend to say, give us a butcher's hook for a look. So there are plenty of examples. My father was a great user of rhyming slang, and he had his own versions of various things. For instance, for the Catholic clergy, which always was a great source of amusement for him, he talked about the cream and yeast, the currant buns, and the one another's. So that was the priest, the nuns, and the brothers.
I'm glad you translated that for me. I was very confused then for a moment. It sounds like Cockney slang was very much up to the individual.
Yes, it varies. We talk about like to be pissed is to be Schindler's List. Well, that's obviously a modern example. It used to be Brahms' List years ago. So it can be updated. And yes, there can be local variation, yeah.
How did it go from that sort of language and from the language that was developing in England at the time to what we would now consider to be uniquely Australian slang?
I think it's just the particular words we use. The principles of slang are the same around the world. It tends to be clever and catchy, like, for instance, a fake bake for a suntan, you know, achieved with the bottle or something like that. It tends to have, say, rhyme in that particular case, or kids call a vanilla slice a snot block, which is sort of quite off-putting. It's clever to think of that. Expressions like flat out like a lizard drinking, which is clever, or to charge like a wounded bull, because charge is used in two different senses. The bull charges in one sense and the person putting the price on something charges in another sense. So Australian slang might be distinctive in the particular examples, but the principles are the same all over.
Where did Australian slang come from?
It's associated with the lower classes in particular as part of the social differentiation, and probably, once again, more with criminal classes or those on the fringe. and those that excite the interest of the authorities, they may not be criminals, but people who travel around, they tend to develop in-group language. But you also get in-group language, you know, at schools, universities and so on. Particular schools can have particular language that's distinctive for that particular school. And age groups, I mean, there's a certain differentiation in age that certain slang might be associated with primary school kids as opposed to secondary school kids, and then kids generally as opposed to adults.
Did we get a lot of language clashes when we had different groups settling Australia at different times, when we had convicts and settlers?
I haven't seen much evidence for that. I've mainly just seen what you might call lower class slang in the literature. I haven't really seen any clear differentiation between different ethnic groups, say Irish versus non-Irish. I recall reading an article by somebody who tried to pick out distinctively Irish elements. There were perhaps a few, but not too many. No, I think it's mainly just a class thing in Australia. If you take fair dinkum, which we think of as an Australian expression, it is basically something that was imported from Britain. Relatively homogeneous slang in Australia, I think, just as Australian accent tends to be relatively homogeneous. The accent comes from southeastern Britain and is similar to the ordinary English of people in southeastern England. And it's not all that far from Cockney, because Cockney gets a lot of publicity, but the English of southeastern England is not all that far from Cockney, and Australian English is in the same sort of type of English. And there's a certain sort of isomorphy between the sounds, for instance, of British English in southeastern England and Australia. Whatever rhymes there rhymes here, for instance.
What are some of the modern-day factors that affect Australian slang and language?
I suppose American influence, particularly among the young, obviously distributed through films and whatnot. And so you can sort of find that people like myself tend to know the old Australian slang, but feel out of it a bit when it comes to young people's slang. We don't quite know what the young people's slang is. And occasionally the newspapers pick this up and give lists of modern slang, which is quite interesting to me, but it's not something I actually come across in everyday life.
What's an example of modern slang that you know of?
One that was a popular a few years ago was bitchin' for good. It came in from America, for instance. And also it's one that you notice because you look at the word, it reminds you of bitch and you think it's probably something negative.
Yeah, yeah. What about advertising influences or even marketing brands? Because I assume that Macca's is distinctively Australian to call McDonald's Macca's. We shorten words quite a lot.
Yes, and add the suffix E or the suffix O, so, or ers, as in preggers, for instance, refo for refugee and that sort of thing, and to take a sickie for based on sick. Yeah, lots and lots of that. Those diminutives are very, very popular.
Has it then become, if you know these diminutives, if you know these sort of rhyming slangs and these words, that you are accepted as being Australian?
Yes, that's one of the most important things. I think really the most important thing is this identity. And I know myself when I write, I sometimes try to slip some of these things into things I send overseas and they normally get marked out.
With politicians using slang, is that a good thing to identify with them more, or do you think it counts against them?
Look, I think politicians have to be careful. Obviously, they can use slang to try and identify with their audience. It probably works better for a Labor politician. I think you have to be careful. Some people might prefer to go in the other direction and speak formally.
I've got a few things here that I take it are uniquely Australian words, what they mean or where they might have come from. G'day.
Well, g'day is obviously just a form of good day and is a natural enough way of greeting somebody. It's curious that it happens to have caught on in Australia and it's not used in other parts of the English-speaking world.
Huru.
When I was a kid, many adults would say huru when they were leaving somebody, and I cottoned onto it and used it a lot. When I went to look it up in the dictionary, I couldn't find it. And eventually I found it said it was an abbreviation of huru, and it was related to hooray. And that surprised me. Now, I grew up among people who said ouse for house and so on. But in all of those cases, I would have heard my parents and school teachers pronounce the word properly, so I knew that you had to put the H in. But I never heard huru with the H. Although I notice in Burke's Backyard, I think he ends the program with huru. So that one's a quite interesting one. So it's a variation of hurrah and huru, and then the H is dropped, and for me it's sort of permanently dropped.
Bugger.
Bugger is supposed to go back to Bulgarian. I don't know whether that's the case. And, of course, referred to buggery originally, caught on a lot in Australia and also in pigeon. So, for instance, in the pigeon of Northern Australia or New Guinea, if something's buggered up, it's not a swear word at all. It is the normal word for something's messed up or wrong. Bugger up is the normal word.
I take it that's an example of Australian language influencing overseas.
In the case of pigeon in New Guinea, perhaps, yeah.
Crikey.
Crikey is from Christ. It's one of those euphemistic forms like Jiminy Cricket for Jesus Christ and Gourd for God and so on, yep.
No worries.
Yeah, no worries, no sweat, no trouble. They're a series, aren't they, that became popular about 40 or 50 years ago.
That's all the time we've got for the La Trobe University podcast today. If you have any questions, comments or feedback about this podcast or any other, you can send us an email at podcast@latrobe.edu.au. Professor Barry Blake, thanks for your time today.
Good, thanks, Matt.